Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining me now is a guy that I've never met before, but I feel like we need to open up a law firm called Ragazzo & Recco. It just has a nice little ring to it. He covers the Mets for Sports Illustrated. Pat Ragazzo with us. Pat, thanks for a couple of minutes on this Saturday afternoon. How are you?
I'm great, Jerry. How are you? Thanks so much for having me. And that's a genius idea, Ragazzo & Recco. I love that. Maybe Recco & Ragazzo if you like that better, but that's a genius idea.
Works for me. The only problem is I'm too stupid to be a lawyer, but I do think it would be a great idea in about 10 years or so. So, all right, so let's talk about the Metsies, because I am confused by this organization that explain to me what you think the holdup is, because I've seen stories from, you know, several different angles with this Alonso story.
Well, I think from the Mets perspective, they love Pete. He's meant a lot to the franchise. They see him in a certain light. They hold his value on a certain level. And Pete Alonso and Scott Boras disagree with where the Mets value Pete Alonso versus where Pete Alonso and Scott Boras value themselves and value Pete's market. But Pete's market hasn't been there. So the Mets feel like they've made more than enough fair attempts and are exhausted, as Steve Cohen said last Saturday. But they made the 3-year, $70 million or so offer with the opt-outs on the short-term deal. And hey, they offered Pete Alonso a 7-year contract extension for $158 million 2 years ago that he turned down. So the Mets they hold Pete Alonso in a certain value, and Pete Alonso doesn't agree with that. So that's kind of, without getting into the nitty-gritty of it, of what exactly the holdup is contractually, no one really knows. That's really what it kind of comes down to if you simplify it.
What's interesting to me is, and I don't know what I would do in Pete's position, but I think if it was me, and it's certainly outside looking in, it looks like the big problem here is Boras. I could be wrong, but just from watching Steve Cohen last week and some of the things he was talking about how difficult the negotiations have been, it seems like Boras is the problem. If it was you, would you try and step in personally to try and get something done, or would you be the type of person to just let a guy like Boras handle it? Because I don't know that this gets resolved anytime soon.
So that's a good question, Jerry. I actually watched a clip on Eric Hosmer's podcast with Bernie Williams as a guest, talking about when he was going through a similar situation for the Yankees. Scott Boras was his agent at the time, and Scott had Bernie call up George Steinbrenner directly, and that's how they got a deal done. He said about an hour later, hour and a half later, George called up Bernie and said, this is what we have to offer. And then Scott and Bernie wound up taking it. So I've actually been asked that a couple times about, is Steve Cohen and Pete Alonso, should they just get rid of the middlemen and come together and talk? That's definitely a possibility. And especially if this does wind up coming to fruition and Pete Alonso comes back, like, that could potentially be the driving factor in what moves the needle And especially after the war of words between Cohen being candid with the fans about how he doesn't like the negotiations, Scott Boras' rebuttal last week, and now the two sides have re-engaged since Monday, and the widespread industry belief right now, there's a lot of smoke behind the fact that everyone's pretty much under the impression that Pete Alonso doesn't want to go to the Blue Jays, otherwise he already would have, and he wants to be a Met, and that's his preference. And I've reported that, and a number of people around the game have said it. Others have reported it. Like, it's just the elephant in the room now that I think he kind of showed his hand there, and the Mets will hold a lot of leverage.
So then, and I happen to believe everything you're saying. There's a couple of things, though, that would trouble me if I was signing Pete Alonso. Number one, he wasn't great last year. The numbers are good, but if you watched him, he wasn't great last year. Number two, his age doesn't help. And then I go back to what you just referenced, the offer that he had. He has got to be kicking himself left and right. And I do wonder, if I was Pete Alonso, like, what was I expecting? Like, I guess he was expecting Aaron Judge. I mean, does that sound like that could have been the problem? Or do you think he was told by someone, let's say a Boras, that he deserves money like that and that the Mets were shorting him with that offer?
Well, to be fair, at the time, Pete Alonso was under different representation. He rejected the offer under his previous agent, and then he switched agents to Scott Boras in the following offseason. That was a fair market value long-term contract offer for a first baseman. It's not, we're not in the Albert Pujols, Angels era, Miguel Cabrera, Prince Fielder. Like, those guys all got big money in the 2010s decade, and none of those deals panned out long-term. Like, they were disasters for every team, and these are guys who are going to be in the Hall of Fame. Like, that, it just didn't, those are Hall of Fame players, and now first baseman are paid like running backs because they don't age well. So, to be fair, again, like Pete Alonso, the 7-year, $158 million deal would have bought out his final year of arbitration last year for around $20 million. So really, the deal would have been for around 6 years, $137.5 million tacked on. Pete Alonso could follow Yoenis Cespedes' track 9 years ago when Cespedes was the same age and carried the Mets to the World Series in 2015. He signed a 3-year, $75 million deal with opt-outs. And I believe there was multiple opt-outs in the deal, but he opted out after 2016 after having another good year. Cashed in to stay with the Mets, 4 years, $110 million, a guy who was very impactful, but he did a lot less for the Mets franchise than Pete Alonso has the last 6 years. Like, let's just be honest about it. So I think Pete just kind of, like, it's a pride thing maybe, and he feels like he's done a lot for the organization and deserves some more leeway, I guess, than they've been offering him, and maybe rose-colored value, maybe. Like he views himself on a higher standing because of what he means to the franchise. I mean, if Pete Alonso comes back for one more year with the Mets, 27 home runs, which he averages close to 40 a season, he'll be the all-time leader in franchise history, even if he is with the Mets just one more year. So, I think it's a lot of sentimental stuff, you know, and personal feelings, and I wouldn't be surprised if Pete had some hard feelings on his side. But the fact that the two sides are negotiating again, and it's pretty obvious that Pete wants to stay, and he's made that clear on record in the past, so numerous times. So, I think that's a good sign, and we might see this thing come to a head in a couple weeks, I would guess. I mean, spring training's about 2 weeks away, so Mets are going to need an answer, in the coming weeks as well, because they'll have to, you know, continue to pivot if Pete doesn't come back.
Pat Ragazzo, Sports Illustrated, with us here on The Fan on this Saturday. Just one more on that, and then we'll move on to a couple of other things with the team. It is, when you bring up the rose-colored glasses and the Met career and all that, it is all true. And it is amazing to think, I guess if I put myself in Pete's shoes, you know, I've hit 50 home runs, I've been the fan favorite, I've done this, I've done that, and yet you just got a guy and you just handed him, you know, $750 million, and we're fighting over, let's say, $20 million or something. So I guess from that standpoint, I could certainly see the frustration. All right, talk to me. Let's assume for a second that Pete's not back. Let's just say he's not. Has this team done enough, or are they set up to be as good as they were last year when they got going and challenge again in the National League, or are they that big piece away?
I think they're a bat away still. And the way these front offices look at this, I mean, there's always a number of options and possibilities and pivots and what ifs entering a season. And there are a number of different things on the table, some reported and some not. And I don't believe that the Mets are done. I think their best path, in my opinion, would be to acquire a right-handed hitting first baseman through the trade market, which I've been reporting some names recently. whether that's Ryan Mountcastle, Spencer Torkelson, checked in on Yandy Diaz recently. Like, I think the Mets need to bring in another bat. They have been saying, through people I've spoken to and through my reporting, they are open and confident in the guys that they have, and they've made that pretty clear. But from the outside looking in, I do feel like they're a bat away. And we're talking about the front office's approach, and this is for all 30 Major League Baseball teams. They look at the trade deadline as well, especially when thinking about certain players who, if they made a trade for them now, they'd have to give up more. If they don't have enough by the trade deadline, they think they're good enough, and the Mets should be good enough to be in either competing for the division or a wild card spot by the trade deadline, that they could acquire a first baseman from one of the teams that's not in contention by the trade deadline and have to give up less. There, again, a number of different possibilities, but another thing is Brandon Nimmo still dealing with the plantar fasciitis. He's targeting opening day, but you just kind of don't know, and they need to take it slow with him and be careful with him so they don't cause him to miss significant time this year, especially given it's a marathon and a 7-month season. So all things to consider, and you know, especially if Nimmo's availability and at least his production, even if he's playing hurt or not at 100%, like that's all things that they need to take into account before they as they finish building up this roster heading into the year.
I guess then you would see Siri in center field. Pat Ragazzo with the Sports Illustrated. How about these two guys? Explain to me, number one, I was just talking about this before you came on, because he made such a big impact when he got here. The fact that Jose Iglesias is not signed, number one. Number two, what is the role, or will he have a role? Because I thought when Luis Angel Acuna played, when he was pressed into service in September, and even when he pinch ran a bunch in October, I thought he had a role with this team. One, will Iglesias be back? Two, will Acuna have a role on this team this season?
Well, with Iglesias, I'd say never say never. They haven't seriously pursued him yet, and they have a bunch of potential utility options and infielders with their young guys who they want to give a chance. It's my understanding that Luis Angel Acuna could win an opening day spot on the roster or a starting spot in the infield with a good spring training showing. They're very, very impressed with what he was able to do in such a high-leverage spot in September with no big league experience. He was smooth. He was composed. He has great defense in the field, versatile. Positional flexibility is something David Stearns really values and looks for in a player. He has speed on the base path, and he hit at the big league level, even though it was a very short stint, which, again, the Mets are realistic about. But with a good Grapefruit League showing and spring training, then he very well could be on the opening day roster. And the signing of Nick Madrigal yesterday was decreased the chances that Iglesias is coming back. I mean, Madrigal doesn't play shortstop, so that's one thing Iglesias has going for him, and Acuna as well, because the Mets don't have a backup shortstop on the roster besides Acuna, unless they went with him on opening day. And yeah, that kind of that type of versatility gives guys a better chance to crack the 26-man roster out of camp. So yeah, I think, again, Iglesias, it could wind up coming to fruition if the Mets are in need or they feel that he's the last piece to kind of complete their roster. And, I mean, he's a great clubhouse presence and almost single-handedly turned around their season last year, at least in the vibes department.
Bingo!
So, yeah, right, exactly. That's what everyone talks about. But just when you're looking at roster flexibility and everything, they're not going to have Iglesias have that option of having Iglesias either play in the minors, start in the minors like they did last year. It was a surprise that he was willing to do so. They had told him upon signing that minor league deal last year in the offseason that he would have his opportunities and his chances, and it took a little longer than maybe people expected with the struggles of Joey Wendell, but Iglesias came up and the rest is history. So it might not be the case this year with guys like Acuna playing, unless the Mets make a trade and have to send one of those guys out. Then I would say that a Jose Iglesias reunion would be a little more realistic.
It's so funny because I don't want to sit here and make this about Jose Iglesias. The Mets are not, about Jose Iglesias by any stretch, and I know that. But everything you just said is exactly why you mentioned that they signed Madrigal, whoever the hell that is, when you've got the guy who really, I think it was Nick Castellanos that said, in his opinion, he was the MVP of the playoffs, or at least with the Mets' run, was the energy and the flexibility and the versatility this guy brought and what he did to the locker room, and yet he's hanging out there with not a job. It just doesn't make sense to me, but all right, fine. And then lastly for you, Pat Ragazzo, Sports Illustrated, the pitching. I mean, that's obviously been a big talking point as well, and rightly so. The fact that they got Manaea back is great. You've got Senga. We don't know.
Gearing up for the big game? We are too. Join us on the Moth Podcast for a special episode dedicated to hilarious true stories about football, family, and growing up.
I loved Franco Harris so much that in 1975, I invited him to my bar mitzvah. And he was so cool that he actually sent me a telegram.
Each week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, and above all, true. Find the Moth Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
About Monta, I feel like David Peterson gets disrespected because I thought he was great in the playoffs.
Yep.
This starting five, and I guess Clay Holmes right now would be one of those guys too. Is it good enough, or is this the type of rotation you look at that they'll still maybe look to add? I know the Dylan C stuff is out there, and maybe look trade deadline type of timing. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think the trade deadline point that you just made, that you brought up, is probably more realistic, because they would have to give up less assets for a Cease or a Michael King, who they've talked about with the Padres. And the Padres just reached an arbitration agreement with Michael King yesterday, and they also added in a mutual option of $15 million for next year. So it kind of sounds like Preller wants to keep King and wants to keep his guys together, despite the infighting with ownership, the mess that's going on over there, the budget constraints. It sounds like King actually would be easier for the Mets to acquire, or any team to acquire, because it'd be a lesser package than Cease. And they have exchanged some names regarding King, at least that I've heard. And it just doesn't seem, it seems like King might be more likely to stay unless the Padres are not in contention at the trade deadline. So Cease, I guess, is the guy who they would like to move. But from what I've heard over the past week or so, the price for him is astronomically high for a one-year rental. And it's just not really a move. From people I've talked to around the game, like, it's not a move that David Stearns is known for making. Like, giving up prospect capital like that for a one-year rental just, like, kind of isn't his style. And it's not really the plan and philosophy of the organization. And the Mets are pretty confident right now with their pitching lab, their resources, their coaching staff, player development, that they can get their hands on most arms and unlock potential in them. Like, we've seen the Yankees do with journeyman relievers over the past decade or so and turn them into all-stars. Like, the Mets feel that way about all the pitchers that they bring in, and they have a pretty deep rotation right now. If Seng is healthy, I mean, again, that's an if after last year. Manaea is back. They figured something out with him, and they want to keep a good thing going, and I think they'll be able to do so, given that he's staying in the organization. David Peterson broke out last year. He's a former first-round pick. He's hitting his stride now. He's had some injuries over the years. And Montas, they really liked, and Montas was pretty good once he got traded to the Brewers last year. And Clay Holmes is a project who they're confident in. I mean, he hasn't been a starter since his rookie year in the big leagues and in the minors. But, I mean, if he's a fifth, even a sixth starter, like, you're fine with that, because they are going to go with a six-man rotation most likely because of Senga. And I do feel like they should add. I mean, they are thinking Griffin Canning will be that sixth guy in the rotation, swingman. If that doesn't work out, they have McGill. If that doesn't work out, then Udo might have to go from the bullpen to the rotation. Like, they are very deep. So if they acquire another starter, I would think that they would be moving another starter, which is possible if they make a trade for a right-handed bat or even for another starting pitcher. Again, like, Cease and King make sense on paper for the Mets, but I just don't think it's the type of move that they would do. And Jack Flaherty's still out there, but there hasn't been much buzz there. And the one name I would keep an eye on is Nick Pivetta. I know the Mets have liked him for a long time. They checked in on him in December. He has the QO attached to him. That's why he's still out there. But if Pete Alonso winds up leaving, the Mets are gaining a compensatory draft pick from Pete leaving, and then they would be giving one up if they signed Pivetta. So I think that's one of the names to keep an eye on the free agent market for starting pitching if Pete does in fact leave. I know the Mets are confident in what they have in their starters.
All right, we'll end it with this. We're going to go rapid fire with Pat Ragazzo from Sports Illustrated covering the Mets. I'm going to give you five questions, and it's basically just a yes or no answer. Don't even think about it. Fair enough?
Fair.
All right, here we go. Question number one. Is Pete Alonso on the Mets opening day? Uh-oh,
yes.
You're thinking.
Yes, we'll say yes.
Okay.
I'll say yes. I'll be glass half full. Yes.
Okay. Will Kodai Senga be healthy opening day? I'm not saying he's starting opening day. Will he be healthy and on the roster opening day?
Yes.
Does Edwin Diaz have a monster season?
Yes.
Boy, I like that. Okay, two more for you. Does Ronnie Mauricio make an impact at some point this season?
No, I'll say no because okay. It's a maybe, so I'll say no.
All right, fair enough. And then the last one I'll leave you with, can Francisco Lindor come close to the MVP-type season he had in 2024 and 2025?
Yes, as long as Juan Soto and Mark Vientos are protecting him in the lineup and they continue that, those three being the heavy hitters and potentially Pete Alonso back, I think Lindor will have plenty of protection behind him.
Pat, really appreciate you jumping on today. Good stuff. And if I do this again, I'll have you on again. I appreciate it.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, Jerry.
That is Pat Ragazzo, soon to be of Ragazzo & Recco Law Firm. But right now he covers the Mets for Sports Illustrated.